Welcome to the McCove Mindset Podcast. Today, we're going to do another segment of Collaboration Socialites, and I am very happy to have on board today Chris Evans. He goes by the name Audio Gust. He just recently released an EP with many members of the Collaboration Social. The EP is called Love and Pain. Go and check that out. If you haven't listened to it already, it is incredible. There will be a link below. I'm very happy to know Chris. He's got a wealth of experience and knowledge, and he's just downright an awesome human being. So I hope that you enjoy getting to know him as well. Let's get to it.
And what got you started in music, Chris?
I've always sort of been a fan of music and really into it. My dad played guitar, so there was always sort of music around the house. In fact, that guitar right there was his guitar. There's pictures of me with that guitar when I was 4 years old. So it's kind of neat to have it here.
And my dad's guitar is back here, actually. So I get that sentimental meaning.
Yep. And I remember, you know, when I was very young, like listening to music, you know, putting on the records and singing along, walking around the living room like I'm performing. And then at age 13, I started a band and we started writing original songs because we weren't good enough to play anybody else's songs. And so we wrote our own. If I think back on them now, they were terrible songs. But, you know, for what we were, it was a great way of learning all of the ways of being together as a band. You know, what is a song and what works and what doesn't work. And you have to write the bad ones before you write the good ones. So yeah, started pretty early with that. And then, you know, when I went to college, I was strangely fortunate that the dorm that I lived in had a recording studio, or we were putting together a recording studio when I got there. So
where
I got
you go?
To spend,
where'd you go to school?
I went to the University of Michigan, and this was a student run recording studio that one of the guys who was a couple years ahead of me, somehow he convinced the university in the dorm to take music practice rooms and put a wall between them and then put a window in the wall with angled glass.
Yep.
And a hole so we could run some cables through there. So we had a little tiny control room and a little larger size live room. And, you know, we did fundraisers and brought our own equipment as a bunch of different musicians there together to kind of make it work. And, you know, we had an 8-track reel-to-reel deck and a board, and I had a bunch of little outboard rack gear because this was the 80s, and so everything was about building cool rack stuff and digital delays and reverbs and whatnot. Learned an awful lot about recording then, and spent the next quite a while writing software and worked at a bunch of different places and Microsoft a lot of the time. During all that time, music was still a thing that I would come back to. Like, there would be a band for a little while. I would write sort of little clusters of songs and record them and keep up with, you know, DAWs and other technology and things like that that were growing.
Did you hear your music kind of change during, oh, yeah, as you're creating across all these decades? So what were, yeah, your influences like during that time from like the 80s through?
80s, I was big into, and you'll still hear that in my music today, like The Police, Crowded House, who are just wonderful. And the Police sound.
That it's stuck.
It's that delay and chorus thing that Andy Summers did that I just love. And I was so excited like last year to hear that chorus sound on guitar was starting to come back again. And I was very excited about that. And the 90s was, you know, I wasn't up in Seattle yet. I am now, but it was the Seattle grunge sound, Nirvana and Pearl Jam and maybe Dave Matthews Band and things like that. And, you know, all of those things sort of play into what I do now. But a lot of the music that I did back then was instrumental because I didn't particularly like my voice, but more than that, I didn't have any place that I could really record vocals that would sound good. So I did a whole bunch of instrumental stuff during that time. And it wasn't until I sort of built the space really that I started doing more vocal things and working on, you know, my own voice and more melodies and harmonies and stacking all of those. That's sort of what came through here. And then about during the pandemic, we bought this house, which had this garage, which was a 4-car garage. I don't have 4 cars. So it took half of it and made this space, which is my
4
soundproof.
Cars, 27 yeah. guitars, you know.
Yeah. I mean, well, I can fit a lot more guitars in the space than I can fit cars in the space. So it, you know.
Made sense.
Yeah. That's just math, right? That's how you do it.
You mentioned that you got into like DAWs and stuff. Like you started on like the reel to reel tape and you got into DAWs. So what was that? How was that change your creative process?
I think I was always looking for a way to get more out of what I had. So for a while, So when I was recording my own stuff after college, I had one of those, you know, Tascam Portastudio 4-track cassette things, right?
Snap, yeah.
But I wanted
like
more.
A memory spark in my mind. I'm like, whoa, yeah.
And I remember like when I was around high school, maybe even earlier than that, we went and like my band recorded a couple songs for this album thing that a radio station was doing that we did not make it on because, again, we were still pretty terrible. We went to some friend's house and they recorded one of those Portastudios, but with real drums, real like nicely mic'd drums. And, you know, we sounded better than we ever had with this little 4-track cassette thing. And I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. Right. But 4 tracks, I mean, it's when you're used to DAWs today or you have effectively unlimited tracks. 4 is this crazy limitation. I mean, even, and this was after I'd been doing 8, like in the studio, right? So I wanted to be able to get more out of that. And I had synthesizers and did MIDI things too. And so what I would do is I would have, take one track of that cassette thing, record a SMPTE stripe down on it. So now I had 3 tracks, but that SMPTE thing could then sync up through an audio interface to a MIDI, a bunch of MIDI gear. And so I could have my drums be on a drum machine that's sequenced in a sequencer. Any keyboard part, potentially bass parts if I wanted to, could all be in the sequencer. And so then I had a limited number, roughly, of sequencer tracks. I mean, it was running on a Mac SE with 4 megs of RAM, but you could do a lot with that back then. And so I had a bunch more tracks then, because then the audio tracks were just for vocals or maybe guitar parts. But that was a step forward from what just the 4 tracks of audio was. And then when DAWs came out, I bought Logic back when Logic came in a box, you know, and it cost like $1,000 or something like that back then, right? It was really expensive. But if you think about what it would take me to go and buy an 8-track reel-to-reel deck, it was not a bad deal. That wasn't nearly what it is today. But it was just a huge step forward from what we had before that. And then you look at what we have today, it's just ridiculous in terms of the amount of choice that we get. I mean, everything that comes with Logic is 100 times more than you would need to actually be able to do things. And yet, what about that new plugin? Right. Ooh, but what if I got that? I could have something that
got
could,
it. That's going to make this oh, it's
you, you, know
make
you already have that. Difference. Yes, but this one goes to 11 kind of thing, right?
That transition in technology that changed how you create. How have you experienced that and how it's changed how you collaborate?
So I started collaborating only in the past year and a half, 2 years.
You didn't collaborate when you were in the 80s and the 90s and you didn't collaborate much then?
We were in bands and so we would do things, I mean, that, which I suppose is collaboration, but it's a little bit of a different feel because it's just sort of jamming at that point, which is arguably part of it, but the intent wasn't, oh, we're going to sit down and work and write a song together, or we're going to work on a song together, right? It was, you come up with an idea and then people would sort of do their own parts. And I suppose, you know, that is sort of what collaboration is, but the goal wasn't then towards recording a song. It was, you know, we got a gig coming up and, oh, here's an idea that we could have another song in the gig, right? And so
yes, I understand
that's collaborate, but it's different from sitting down with other songwriters and let's write a song in this way. Right. I certainly never did that before because I didn't know a bunch of other songwriters back then. Almost nobody is anywhere near me geographically. And so, you know, it's all been through Zoom meetings with only a couple of exceptions. I had some folks come down here and we actually did a weekend writing a song, which was a blast. But for the most part, it's all been technology. It's only been through the ability to have these types of Zoom conversations and have tools that let us share music that this is even possible in the first place. Otherwise, I would just sort of be like I did from the 90s and the 2000s is sort of hold up doing this alone and going, I wonder where I'm going to put this stuff.
So then how are you creating now?
As you can probably see by all the gear behind me, I do all the parts, right? When I write my own songs, usually it's me writing the music and the lyrics, and then I play the drum parts and the guitar parts and the bass parts and the whatever, and then I record it myself and I mix it myself and I master it myself. Part of the reason I do that is because I'd never want to get stuck from being able to finish it, stuck behind someone else who, you know, oh yeah, that this person's supposed to mix, or I need this person to sing on, or I need whatever, and they're just not available, or they don't feel like it, or they're whatever. I don't like getting stuck not being able to complete things. You know, as much as there's nice things about that, it's also sort of a weakness because that means I'm sort of limited to what I can think of. You know, you're sort of doubling or more the creative thoughts, right? When I'm doing something, I can go, is that good or not good? I don't know. And if someone else goes, ooh, that's awesome, or I bet we could do better, I will definitely go with either of those sort of thoughts. And then we can move on to the next part maybe quicker, or maybe get to something that's better quicker. And it's really nice when I can come in with some of the stuff that I do and here's someone else who's just really ready to contribute something that I would never have thought of. And it's just better. And I love that. And so when that happens, it's really amazing. And I'll give you an example of that. The song Love and Pain, which, you know, we did during the collaborations. We wrote during Collaboration Social, but the music was already existed. It was a song that I'd sort of done myself a year earlier. And I didn't really like where I went with it from a story perspective or a melody perspective. And I played Sam and Lucy a couple of different tracks ideas that I had, and they liked it a lot and took it and came up with just a great melody and a set of lyrics. Sam recorded the vocals for it, a couple of different takes on it, and sent that to me. And so then I was able to sort of mix it and get it to sort of where the song is that we released. It was really nice because in 2 weeks, you know, some I've had a lot of collaborations that have gone on for months. And the ones that start from scratch tend to take a little bit longer because it's like, well, but we could go in any direction. And if you don't lock in on a path, it's really easy to just sort of spiral off into, you know, anything is possible land. And so could it be better? The answer is always yes, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be, that, or doesn't mean it needs to be, right? It's really important to actually to finish things. One of the things that's great in collaboration, and particularly with that 2 week timeline, is you got to have something. That's not to be a final thing, but it's got to be a thing.
Yeah, that accountability goes a long way.
Yeah. Well, and it's also, it can be a crutch, right? It can be a, it's good enough for what we're going to do on Friday, right? We can play this. I'm not embarrassed by this. I don't know if this is the thing I would want to do and finally release or not, but, you know, that'll work. That'll be good enough for hitting that brief. But, and sometimes maybe that's what the answer is. That's okay. Because, yeah, you know, it's not always going to be the great song that you're going to want to release. But sometimes it is then.
Which happened in your case.
Which happened, you know, a couple times, right? Well, and actually, all three songs in this release are all from collaborations. They are all sung by one of the collaborators. So I don't sing on any of them, which is all new for me. All three of these songs are just, they're very different. So you can sort of tell where I'm working with those artists and where their sort of sound is. And Not Okay is even more interesting because it's almost more my sound than it is what she does ordinarily. But it was, she sounds so good on it. Whereas Believe Me was done in the Collaboration Social as part of, you know, the artist accelerator project you were working on. So that was just an entirely different process, right? And it was a assembly line process of creating music for people. Tobias and Maggie and I all came up with a lot of different seeds of ideas, not complete ideas. And this is all based on your suggestions of create these short song fragments, just seeds of a song, and record them, and just enough to be able to share them with each other. This is before we even had Zara in there. And so we spent a couple days and came back with, we each had three. So we had nine to choose from. And we chose three of those to develop to the next level. And then we shared those with Zara and she chose, you know, the first one, which was Believe Me in this case. And then we finished it with her, right? We did this, you know, I had first verse and the sort of pre-chorus and the chorus of that. And then we sort of tweaked those a little bit and then added a second verse and the bridge part and sort of finished it from there. It was a really different way of putting it together. But the thing that came from that I loved, the idea of creating seeds.
I'm so glad that it turned into something that was that you're able to put in your tool belt. Well, if you could say one thing that's like wisdom you'd like to impart, what would that be? What would the one thing that you would say?
I would say, first of all, keep doing it. Don't get too precious about any particular song. Write more of them. Partly because the music business is the numbers game. You put out more things. Like, no one knows, like, whether any given song is going to be huge or not. Like, almost no one knows that. People can have an idea, oh, this one could be, but they don't know it's going to be. And so if you don't, you know, if you keep trying to make that one song even better, it might make it better, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be one that's going to really suddenly be the thing that'll be the next big thing for you. And so, yes, finish them, but then go on and do the next one. So write more, write early, write often. And the second thing is release them. Get those songs out there. The best song or the worst song, it doesn't matter if it's sitting on your hard drive. It's just bits that are slowly degrading. And, you know, you will understand better what it's like to do this and what people think and how people react to your music. If you take songs that you really love and, you know, don't put them out there just to put a volume out there, put them out because this song speaks to you. And if you love it, that's enough, because there will be other people who it will hit in the same way that it hits you. And it won't be everybody, but that's fine. Nothing is. So, yeah. So put them out there, because if they're not out there, then no one can find you as a songwriter, as a producer, as an artist. If your ideas are, you know, locked away in your head or locked away in your hard drive, they're effectively non-existent. But once they're out there, then they can be the next thing, right? They could lead you to the next collaboration. They could lead you to the publisher who wants what you do, the artists who want what you do, the labels who want what you do. You know, it's getting it out there. That's the key thing. And then you do all the work to try to find the right people so they can do that. But if it's not out there, none of that matters.
I want to just say thank you. I want to say thank you for showing up for yourself, showing up for the group, showing up for me. And I just want to say personally, thank you for even going along with the experiments that I'm just like testing out sometimes.
I think that's it. And I really appreciate it. I do appreciate what you've done with the Collaboration Social and the rest of the folks who are sort of involved that are sort of, you know, keep it going too. It's a great idea. I mean, it's just, you know, let's have people come together, write more, practice writing things, share those with the world. And don't worry about whether it's, you know, it's a big hit or not. I mean, some of the songs that we do are just great songs, and some of them are just fun or funny or, you know, silly, honestly. And that's fine, because it's like exercising. It's like writing. It's like anything. You do it more, you get better at it. It doesn't have to be great stuff to make you better. It's, you know, the reps when you're exercising don't have to be great reps. If you're doing the reps, then it's the doing that matters, right? It's the meditation. It's the act of meditating that matters, not the result of it. And so having a place where every month we get together and say, let's write something. There's a chance that some songs like, you know, Believe Me or Love and Pain will come from that. And there's a bunch of other ones that I think that are really great that, you know, should come out of this too. And there's a bunch that won't, and that's okay, because the diamonds will appear if you do the doing.
Do the doing, yes. Do the doing. You know how we have the mantra, which is that my future can be better than my present, and I have the power to make it so. I was writing that down the other day, and I'm like, maybe in the future, we will have merch that says, and I have the power to make it social. Like, you know, because like, that's really what everyone has had the power to do, is to make it social. And that's great, man. Thank you. Thank you so much. I really
appreciate it. I appreciate it.